Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Maybe you've heard about BPD or borderline personality disorder, but maybe you don't really know what it is. I know that I don't. We're going to find out exactly what is borderline personality disorder or BPD today on Inside Austin. What is it? What are the symptoms? What are the effects? What are the treatments available? To help us get through the information is Dr. Alan Frazetti. He's with the Department of Psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. He's also a vice chair at the National Education Alliance for BPD. That's borderline personality disorder. Dr. Alan Frazetti, I appreciate you taking time to join us here on Inside Austin today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Before we can get too far into it, we have to define it. What is BPD or borderline personality disorder?
Well, that's a great question. It's a very strange name for a set of problems, isn't it?
It's a long one.
It's an antiquated name, but basically today what it means is that the person has a pretty stable and fairly extensive pattern of unstable emotions, interpersonal relationships, sense of self, and often some kind of impulsivity, problems with impulsivity and suicidality, at least most of those things.
If you say that the term is antiquated, what would be a better term if they were to rename it today?
Well, let's see. In other parts of the world that use the international classification system, they call it unstable emotion, affective or emotional instability is what they call it.
And if somebody has, I don't know, if it's an affliction or I guess they're dealing, if somebody's dealing with BPD, what are the short-term and what are the long-term effects kind of as they move through their life dealing with this?
Well, a big question there is whether or not they're getting good treatment. And I'll come back to that in a minute. But I want to make the distinction for people that unstable emotion is something that, on the one hand, is kind of normal. You know, I suspect everybody who's listening has had a moment, or maybe more than one of them, when we feel big emotion, and that's normal. And I want to be clear that emotion sensitivity and emotional reactivity is on a continuum, and that a person can have a lot of emotion and not at all have anything disordered about it. There's a gray zone, and when you cross that line into it being more of a disorder, it means that there's really some impairment in social functioning and emotional functioning, that emotions are so big they get in the way of being able to live your life well, whether that's in relationships or work or school, or self-concept and self-esteem, and maybe even in terms of controlling your own actions, not being impulsive and certainly being stable and alive and not trying to harm oneself. So it's not just having a lot of emotion, which is super common, until it becomes impairing.
And how does somebody know, because I looked at some of the symptoms and I kept thinking, ooh, I've got some of that, and I've got some of that,
yep.
I've got a little of that. Is it safe to say that we all have a little bit of those issues, but maybe we deal with it differently or deal with it at all compared to somebody who maybe suffers a more severe case of BPD?
Well, I think it's fair to say that we're all on this continuum. We all have times when we're more emotionally sensitive. There are times when we react in big ways emotionally. There may even be things that we do that are impulsive. But the more frequent those things become and the more they get in the way of our life, the harder they are to recover from, the more impairment there is. And so while it's normal to be on this continuum of emotion distress, at that upper range, it's not so normal anymore, and it's very painful, and it's hard to acquire balance and stability and move forward.
Like
day to day.
Like so many other things, it's probably dangerous or ill-advised to self-diagnose.
Yep, you bet.
Where would somebody go if they thought maybe they had an issue or maybe someone they loved or knew had an issue? What could they do?
Well, that's a great question. Part of the problem with borderline personality disorder is in its history, until fairly recently, you know, the last maybe 25, 30 years, there really weren't any established treatments. It was frankly, prior to that, kind of hopeless. And so people often did not want to give or much less receive that diagnosis because, frankly, it didn't do much good. You know,
sure.
Part of the purpose of having an accurate classification of problems is that it leads to an appropriate treatment. So a person might start to wonder if they're getting treatment for related problems. So here's the thing. With borderline personality disorder, a person rarely would meet the criteria just for borderline personality disorder. People with BPD, as we call it, typically also move in and out of being depressed, often struggle with anxiety. So perhaps 80 to 90% of people with BPD at one time or another meet classification criteria for being depressed, perhaps 60% or more for one or more anxiety disorders, perhaps a third have some trauma background, PTSD, about 20% might have an eating disorder, 25 to 40% might have substance problems. So there, you can see this pattern. There's a lot of things going on. And if each of those things seems to be related to emotional pain, and a person's had decent treatment for one or more of these problems, and it really isn't helping much, then it might be that it's more the peripheral problems that are getting treated instead of the core BPD set of problems.
Today on Inside Austin, we're speaking with Dr. Alan Frazetti. He is with the Department of Psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. We're talking about BPD. Now, doctor, what are some of those treatment options? Is it medication? Is it therapy? What are the options available?
Well, that's of course the million-dollar question. Borderline personality disorder is a multi-system set of problems. So it affects our self-concept, our thinking, our emotion, our actions, and our relationships. So a treatment that's effective, the treatments that are most effective, are going to intervene on each level. There are no medicines that are approved by the FDA to treat BPD per se. That doesn't mean that a person might not benefit from taking a medicine, but it's not going to treat the BPD. There's nothing that's no medical treatment for BPD. So the treatments that work for BPD are typically working at multiple levels. So the two that have the most evidence are called dialectical behavior therapy, which has been around the longest, and another treatment called mentalization-based therapy. Those are the two that independent evaluators have said, yeah, these are the two bona fide best treatments, best practices for treating borderline personality disorder. There are other treatments that are promising as well. The key thing is that BPD is really a specialty problem. In the world, we might expect anywhere from 25 to 40% of people, all people, to get depressed at some point.
Sure.
It's not a small number. It's a huge number of people. We might expect maybe half of people to struggle with anxiety at some point. You know, and so forth. And maybe a quarter to a third of us will have a substance problem. But BPD affects more like 1 to 2% of the population. It's a very pernicious, it's very severe, it's very painful, and it affects a small number of people. And so getting specialty treatment is the most important thing I can recommend. So in the same way that you wouldn't go to your primary care doctor or your nurse practitioner for a very rare kind of cancer treatment, you wouldn't do that. You wouldn't expect that to be the best place to go, even though that person might understand it medically. You would want to go to a specialist. You'd want to go to a cancer specialist if you had a kind of cancer. BPD is the same. It's a specialty problem. It requires specialty treatment.
And again, what if somebody has the issue or feels like it affects somebody they know or love? Where can they seek more information or treatment, or what's the first step, I guess?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. First, the person that, if it's a teenager or child that you think does, then certainly helping that person to get an evaluation from somebody who knows about BPD is really important. If it's an adult, encouraging them to do that could be very helpful. In addition to the treatments that I mentioned, it's very important to remember that because this also has a relationship component, that actually including partners for adults or siblings or friends or parents for teenagers or young adults can be an extremely helpful part of ongoing treatment. And in fact, the most effective treatments do that. They address the social and family component as well as the emotional and the thinking or cognitive parts and the impulsivity parts. There's an organization called the National Education Alliance for Borderline Personality Disorder, or NEABPD.org, that I would recommend people to go to. You mentioned I'm vice chair, but it's an unpaid position, so I'm not I'm not double dipping here. So you go to the website and you can see there are lots of resources, there are videos and papers, and NEABPD has a program for parents and partners and other people who love somebody with BPD. Those programs are entirely free and have a lot of evidence behind them that they can be very helpful to families.
And doctor, what would you like to say just kind of on the subject that maybe a lot of people don't know and maybe they should know about borderline personality disorder?
Well, I would like people to know that we all have moments that we do things that we wish we could take back. That in retrospect, we say, geez, why did I say that, or why did I do that? And if we're lucky and we work hard at it, those are few and far between. And in between, we can recover and repair. But if for people who are more emotionally dysregulated, they have more of these intense, painful emotional episodes, there often isn't time to recover and repair. And yet, so from the outside, people can get judgmental and critical with people. And that makes sense, but it's actually not helpful. And what's really helpful is to take the time to listen and ask, you know, what's going on, and to know that good treatments work pretty well. The vast majority of people down the road with good treatment can function extremely well in the world and don't meet the criteria for BPD anymore, can actually fully recover. They may still be sensitive people. They still may be people with a lot of emotion. We all know people with a lot of emotion that are healthy and productive and are friends and family.
All right. That's Dr. Alan Frazetti. He's with the Department of Psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. He's also a vice chair at the National Education Alliance for BPD. That's borderlinepersonalitydisorder.org. Dr. Frazetti, I appreciate your time today, and thanks for joining us here on Inside Austin.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.